Hello and welcome into the Vandy Sports Podcast on the 440 Sports Network. I'm your host, Billy Derrick, alongside Luke Wyatt. No Chris Lee today, unfortunately. Hopefully we'll get him back in the saddle here soon, but it's just Luke and I today. So we'll talk a little baseball, probably a little bit of football with spring practice going on. We'll get into some of the mailbag questions. But first, we got a lot of reads to get to here. Anchor Impact is the first one. Commodore Nation, you can get closer to Vanderbilt Athletics than ever before with Anchor Impact, the official NIL collective for Vanderbilt University. As an Anchor Impact member, you gain exclusive privileges and benefits, offering deeper engagement with student-athletes, coaches, staff, and the entire Vanderbilt community. You also become a catalyst for change, redefining the landscape of college athletics and showcasing the potential impact of NIL on student-athletes' lives. Help the Commodores thrive and contribute now by logging on to anchorimpact.com/register. Also, the guest line, which is Luke Wyatt today, is brought to you by Sutherland and Belk, a family-owned injury law firm. If you or a loved one has been hurt or in an accident, give Taylor or Russell a call at 615-846-6200 to see what your rights are and if they can help. Also, we'll be talking a lot of baseball today. The season's baseball content is brought to you by the Murfreesboro Pure Milk Company. This is where Chris gloats about ice cream. I'm sure he's got some in his house right now. But they are a family-owned third-generation milk and ice cream distribution company located in Murfreesboro. A partnership began over 50 years ago with Purity Dairy in Nashville to provide Purity milk and ice cream to consumers in Middle Tennessee. They now serve Southern Kentucky, Northern Alabama, Chattanooga, and North Georgia. For more information, visit their website at mpmci.com. Luke, everything's starting to slow down a little bit. Not a whole lot to get to, but we do have a big baseball series win to talk about over the weekend as they go down to Baton Rouge and really handle LSU those last couple games. I know game two was tighter, but game three was not a contest for Vanderbilt. What did you think about this past weekend? And honestly, Luke, after game one, I don't know if we would have been sitting here. I didn't know if we were going to be sitting here talking about a series win, to be honest.
No, I think, you know, when we fell behind 9-0 on Friday or Thursday, I thought, well, this is going to be possibly a repeat of the South Carolina series. And I was like, got to get out of this funk. And luckily in game, you know, I think the key actually was in game one when we came back, made the final score 10. You know, Vastine hit a 3-run homer and we got back in it. And I think that was huge for their confidence, just a little bit of boost to get them into Friday. And then when the big double play they turned and then taking that lead on the Jaden Davis having such a great weekend, getting his back going again. You know, it's funny. It's been a little bit of a roller coaster season, but only at peak. I mean, at peak, very peak. There hasn't been that up and down, up and down. It's been either great or terrible. There hadn't been an in between. Yeah. And right now we're swinging the bats well again. Of course, the blowout against MTSU last night. I think we're back on track and getting healthier, I think.
Yeah, it does feel that way. And you talk about the word healthy. I think that's important for this team. You know, they did get J.D. Thompson on the mound last night. He threw one inning, and that was their plan all along to get him back rolling. Corbin said he still doesn't know if Utrell is going to be available this weekend. But, Luke, I present this to you, and this is nothing against Devin Futrell, but, you know, they've pitched fine, I think, for the most part. I know it's like one of the three starters will struggle in a weekend, but you never get all three, and a lot of times you don't even get two of them that struggle. Carter Holton's been so inconsistent, but are you concerned about Futrell, or are you kind of sitting here saying, you know, let's keep riding with what we've got right now?
Well, I think, you know, basically we've seemed to have had 12 pitchers at the ready. I'm talking about the entire staff. This league is so good. It hits the ball so well. You're never going to have all three games go your way pitching wise. There's just too many good hitters in this league and so much power. And some of the ballparks you play in, you know, Tennessee's, Auburn's, Georgia's are small parks. So pitchers, especially a guy like Devin, who's a fly ball pitcher, you know, you love to have Devin on the mound when you're playing at Hoover or playing in Omaha.
Yeah.
Because big ballparks, and he's going to hit a lot of warning track fly balls. So I'm not really too concerned about that. I guess my biggest concern is I don't know where we're at with Sawyer Hawks, a bullpen piece. Didn't hear anything about him. You may have. I don't know. But I love the fact that we're still 12 deep. And the fact that Luke Guth, a very talented kid, but needs to be in the weight room. Really came out last night in his debut and struck out the side. I was excited about that for him. So, you know, there's another guy you can use in the midweek.
Well, another young guy, Braden Holcomb, just really exploded in Baton Rouge. And it's funny. I was looking at his batting average before the weekend, and it was, you know, .086, I think.
Yeah.
And now, and include MTSU, now Holcomb sitting at .233. I mean, that's a big jump in a span of about a week. For that kid. And Luke, I think we knew this was in him. You know, Corbin did. And I thought it was an interesting quote pregame yesterday. You know, Allegretta asked him and about Holcomb and kind of his makeup. And he said he's a mature kid. He doesn't really pout. You know, he's not, he's not a normal, I say normal freshman. There's a lot of freshmen that they get through however many at-bats he had at that point when he was struggling. I think he was one for his first 20. You know, as a freshman, that's tough for a lot of freshmen, but his makeup is a little bit different, and, you know, not surprised he's a Corbin recruit, but I just think he is such an X factor for this team. If you get him up hitting even, you know, even 250, 270, just kind of, but hitting with power, him hitting home runs, Luke, is such a key for this team. And I think back in the back of the mind of this staff, they know he's capable of this. And if they get it, it sort of unlocks something for this team.
No, you're exactly right. You know, Braden, people forget, Braden's an athlete. The kid was a shortstop in high school as well. As big as he is, that's a big shortstop. But, you know, when you have an athlete like him who's had everything go his way, he's always been the best player on his team, most powerful kid, everyone looked up to him. And then you come into the shock of the Southeastern Conference and you say, hey, this isn't coming as easy as I thought it was. You know, that takes a little time. And kudos to that kid, because when you start out a 1-for-19, you can get lost and say, well, I'm not ready yet. I need another year of seasoning. But he has battled through it. He's had some really good at-bats. Even during that 1-for-19, he had some great at-bats where he finally made an out, but he, you know, took the count to 3-2 and fouled off a bunch of pitches. I'm excited. I think the sky's the limit for Braden Holcomb.
Another freshman is Ethan McElvain. I want to throw out there to you one more baseball note, and then we'll get to a little bit of football. McElvain is a guy that I think immediately coming in, you know, he's the next guy. He's that next rocker, lighter. But he even struggled initially. I think it was one of those games against Dayton. There was a couple outings there early where he struggled. He got hit a little bit. Probably woke him up. Probably shook him up and said, okay, this is college baseball. This is Division I baseball. But even he goes in there in relief on Friday night at the box under the lights in front of a sold-out crowd and shuts out the LSU bats. And I thought his job of getting Tommy White out, you know, I mean, he was entered to face Tommy White, I want to say with a – I don't know. Was the count 3-2, Luke, or was it – I can't remember.
I think it was either 3-1 or 2-1.
Okay, yeah, so down count, you got to – hey, go face Tommy White on the road on a Friday night in the SEC, and he gets him out, and then he keeps pitching, and he ends up holding on for that win. I think McElvain, again, just like Braden Holcomb, Luke, is a guy that if you get him doing that, maybe he's a piece, maybe he's a bullpen piece for you that can go extended, because that's what you need on a lot of these championship teams. You need those guys that – you know, you can insert into six and go 7, 8, 9 and just kind of roll on for the win. I think McElvain is a guy like Holcomb that is walking into his groove right now.
No, I agree with you. I think, and I mentioned it before, some of these freshmen, it's a shock to your system. In high school, unless you're playing a really, really good team, you only have to worry about getting out a couple of kids. Otherwise, you can throw the ball down the middle with the speed he has and just strike people out. And when you realize at the next level, you got to hit your spots, you got to make sure you're breaking balls on point, or you're not going to get people out. And I think that's just a wake-up call to him and a lot of freshmen in this league. One other thing about this team, I am really excited about, you know, this weekend, if we can get one at A&M, you're going to turn at 9-6. Understanding the schedule gets tougher, but you get 3 home series to 2 road series left. After this weekend, if we can get through it with one win at least, then you just have Georgia, Kentucky left on the road. And this team, my goal for this team is to go 40-14. that would mean they'd have to go 14 and I think eight the rest of the way, or 14-7. That's very much doable. You throw in four midweek games that are very much winnable. So I'm excited. I think we're on the uptick right now.
Yeah, we got a question about that in the mailbag, actually. So we'll get into that. But this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Vanderbilt and Texas A&M top 10 matchup. Saturdays will be on SEC Network. I don't know why all three of these aren't on national TV. That's the weirdest thing to me about college baseball, Luke. It just doesn't feel like there's any consistency where they kind of before the season, they're not flexing anything. They're not changing anything. Even though this is probably the best series of the weekend, but you will get to watch it SEC Network Saturday night up in College Station. Vanderbilt struggled there. I think it was 2019. It's like second series of the year. They lost that one, and there's all kinds of stories about the flight being delayed and Corbin not happy. So I'm sure they'll love to go out there and get that series win. So we'll dive into that, but Luke, let's get into some football here. I know, you've only been able to go to one. I've been to, I think, five or so now, and went to the scrimmage at Lipscomb Academy on Saturday. That was a better look. The first, they had a kind of a half and half scrimmage. It wasn't really a scrimmage. They had some live periods last Saturday. But this past scrimmage at Lipscomb Academy, I thought was a good look at what they kind of want to try to do offensively. And defensively, I think they could go play a game right now defensively. I think defensively that I haven't had any concerns. The concerns have been on the offensive side. And again, defensive concerns will pop up like they usually do, probably game one of the season. But offensively, Luke, I want to go there. And, got to talk to Tim Beck, and he seems very calculated. I still want to meet Kill and talk to him and just kind of get his read on everything. But number one, what are you hearing about so far? What the team's looking like, and then maybe even because I think we've both heard this too. There's another portal window, so I think there's still changes that could possibly happen. But offensively, everybody's overreacting, I think, to the struggles of the quarterbacks. I mean, it's still early. How concerned are you with that fact? Because it hasn't been perfect. I think they knew it wasn't going to be perfect. But offensively, how concerned are you with that? And then number two, just some things of what you've been hearing and kind of the fact that, there could be some more changes.
Yeah. Well, I'll go to that first. I think this next portal window, you're going to find some guys who have now gotten buried on the depth chart. And in spring ball, that's what you're finding out anyway. You're finding out your depth. You know who can and can't play. You know what CJ Taylor can do. You know what Langston Patterson can do. So those guys, and then the offensive linemen that you can depend on, there's probably three or four of them right now. I'm a little concerned with the depth on the offensive line. I think we'll find five really good ones. But after that, I think we may go in the portal and try to find one or two more that may be able to come in and plug in and play, at least in a backup role. I'm not as concerned offensively as I would be if we weren't putting in a new system. Anytime you do wholesale changes on one side of the ball, it's going to look clunky. I don't care if you have a great quarterback to come. And Nate's still learning. He's still feeling his way as a quarterback. I think he has potential to be great. Obviously, an incredible athlete. And then I've said it before on the last couple of podcasts ago, I think Diego Pavia will wind up being the starter. I have no knowledge of that. I'm just saying I think he will be, just for the fact that he knows what they're doing. So he's got an edge on those other kids. So I'm really glad that he's not here for spring so these other kids can get the reps. But is it a huge concern? No, it's not.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, look, Nate Johnson has had some throws where you go, whoa, that was a tight window, nice throw. But he's also had some inaccuracies. But running the football, I think that's the biggest focus with this offense, establishing the run. They didn't do any of that last year like we all know, Luke. And Beck talked about that. We got to find a way to run the football anyway, whether it's, they're going to be running some triple option just like they did a couple years ago. Now, not the old fashioned triple option, the modern triple option out of the gun, of course, but it's going to be interesting to see the quarterback battle. As each day goes on, I'm kind of moving closer to a guy like a Diego Pavia potentially starting. Number one, he's a veteran. Number two, he knows the offense, inside and out, like you said. And again, we're still so far away. Anything can happen, whether it's an injury or not. But I'll be really interested to continue to track that. And you know, when he gets here, because he'll be in the summer, right, Luke?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see. We'll Johnson and Pavia. You also got, I think Dickey's looked pretty good. I think Berlewitz can really spin it too. And you got a couple of freshmen coming in. So that's a jam-packed quarterback room for Tim Beck. So obviously that's our little football update. But Luke, let's hop into the mailbag if you're ready to roll.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Mailbag brought to you by Sutherland and Belk, a family-owned injury law firm. If you or a loved one has been hurt or in an accident, give Taylor Russell a call, 615-846-6200, to see what your rights are and if they can help. All right, the first one, you kind of touched on it already, Luke, from the Admiral VU. Given the Vandy boys' current record of 26-7 and 8-4 in the league, what do you project has to happen in the final 22 games to host a regional? And I think you already kind of touched on that. I wrote down win at least 10 more SEC games. They're at 8 right now. I think if you get to 18, even if you get to 17, you could still host. And even I think there's been some teams that get to 16 hosts. But I think 17 at the very least. But even 18, you might want to get to 18, I think, to be totally sure. They've got 18 more SEC games left. I'm putting it at win at least 10 more SEC games. And maybe if you win 9, you can still get in there as a host. But, you know, in terms of the question, I mean, I don't think this team, obviously they're not in danger of missing a regional, but I would put it there, Luke, 9 to 10 more SEC wins. You've also got a midweek against Louisville later in the season. Louisville's down. I think they lost to Western Kentucky last night, actually. So, and then your other three midweeks won't be a problem. But these SEC series, like you talked about, Luke, you got 3 top 10 teams. This is your gauntlet right here. And even at Georgia, you know, you got to go to Kentucky. I think they match up fine with Kentucky. But I look at, like, the series at home against Florida. I think they need to win that one. Florida's a weird team this year. And then you got Mississippi State at home as well. State's a little bit more dangerous this year. And then Tennessee, of course. But, Luke, I know you kind of touched on it. I'll put mine at 9 to 10 more SEC wins. And then I'm not putting a ton of stock in the midweeks. I mean, they can't go 0-4, but I don't think they'll have any trouble with a lot of those.
No, I'm with you. I think 17 wins will definitely get us a regional. I think 18, and as long as you don't, like you said, go 0-4 against midweek for some reason, then that's going to put you right at 40 wins. I don't ever remember us not being a host and being a national seed with 40 wins, anything less. You know, yeah. So 40, it's kind of that key number. You know, it used to be in basketball, you say if you get to 20 wins, you're in postseason. Now in baseball, especially the SEC, if you get to 40 wins, more than likely that means you've got a winning record in the conference and you're going to at very least host a regional and possibly be a national seed as talented as this conference is. You know, I think A&M and Kentucky, unless they have a meltdown, they're in good shape. And then you look at us, UT, and I'm forgetting right now who has probably the fifth best record, but there's a middle of the pack. They're all jumbled together. So It's going to be interesting. I think everybody we have left has either been ranked or is ranked. So it's going to be fun, but put your seatbelt on, because I feel like if we hit like we've been hitting, it's not going to be a bigger problem. One other quick thing, you know, we talk a lot about Vanderbilt not hitting the long ball, and we've only hit 34. But the key to me is how many long balls we're giving up. And we've only given up 30. If you can keep that number around the same as how many you hit, I think we're going to be fine. We just can't start giving up 8 home runs a game or something like that.
That's a good point. Cunningham's given up 7. Devin Futrell has given up 6. So that, I think, is a concern, because those are two guys that have started a lot of games this year. And you know, when you're on the road – like this weekend's a perfect example, and it'll put this, you know, your theory to the test. If you could, okay, if you don't have to be hitting, you know, 10 home runs a weekend, but as long as you're not giving up 10, you know, that's 10 right. to 15, you know, you'll be fine with this style of play. Because the way they come at teams, Luke, no one else is really doing this other than Kentucky. And I think Chris has talked about that. And it's kind of funny. Vanderbilt is kind of Kentucky on steroids a little bit, the way they play. And I don't think many people want to play a style like that. You saw with LSU, I know LSU is struggling, but they've got as much talent as anybody in the country.
Sure.
And you really saw it come into play, especially those last couple of games. And, you know, Jaden Davis, a home run, ends up winning Friday night, you know, and so I don't think, I think this team has more power than people think and want to admit. You know, hear all the time about where's the power with this team. Yeah, they've got 34 home runs, but I don't know that you want to. I mean, like a team like a Tennessee or A&M or what's another team, Georgia, who has, you know, 80 to 90 home runs in the year. Well, RJ Austin actually talked about this in a Anchor Impact interview coming up, which is a really good one for members there. You should check it out. But, you know, he said that we don't rely on the home run. You know, and there are other teams that do. I mean, look at Georgia. When they're not hitting 4 or 5 home runs a game, they're usually losing because they can't pitch.
Right.
So I think that was a really good point by RJ Austin. It's actually a really good interview. And say you got some wind blowing in, you know, say, I mean, in Hoover and Omaha, those are you know, caves. So that's what I think, Luke. I think it's going to be a ching. And that's your theory is good about as long as you're not giving them up. You know, there's not a concern of you not hitting as many. Let's see here. Let's see if there's another baseball one or if that's it for baseball. Okay, we got one from Lameeks about Camp Kojal. Kojal appeared to be on an All-American path until his injury. Since then, he's 7-for-33, hitting .212 with only 3 extra base hits. What exactly was the injury, and do you still think he is feeling the effects, or do you just think he came back down to earth after a hot start? That's actually a really good question, and I feel ill-prepared for not knowing exactly what happened to him. I think you actually mentioned what happened to him, Luke. I don't think it was anything super serious, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's still feeling some effects of it. But also, you're in the meat of SEC play, and you're a freshman, so I think it could be a little coming back down to earth, and he hasn't had as many at-bats either. You know, he's a lefty, so you're kind of mixing and matching him a little bit. But I don't think the injury was super serious. I think you mentioned what it was actually one of the podcasts.
It's a shoulder, but
right.
Listen, we saw with Carter Young what a shoulder problem can do to your swing. Mm. And, you know, I don't know the severity of it, or if it was just a tweak or tightness, or if he dove in practice for a ball or what. I don't know how it happened. I have no idea. But I can tell you this, if your shoulder is not right, and you're swinging a bat, you're all messed up because your timing's off, the power in your swing's off. There's a lot of things that you just can't go. And I think Tim has done a great job of putting him in games at certain times, trying to get him with matchups and pitching-wise to make him feel comfortable. And I thought you could see some good at-bats at the LSU series, even though he didn't have a lot of hits. Kojal's going to be fine. In fact, he's one of my favorite kids on the team as far as – long term, I think you're looking at a kid that's going to be a star in this league. You know, and another guy now, you know, we talked about this earlier. We've got guys that are now not seeing the field that were starters earlier. You got Bulger out, Leneve, Humphreys, and we're still winning ball games. So, you know, that bench that we talked about has come in handy with all the injuries we've had.
Yeah, the depth is real on this team. I agree with you about Kojal. You know, I think he'll be fine, and I'm glad you mentioned it is the shoulder because I totally forgot about that. So, yeah, that's the answer there for Kojal. Let's see here. Anchor down 0714, another baseball one. How does the apparent emergence of Braden Holcomb change the outlook of the offense and the team's ceiling for the season? I know we touched on this, and I think it's a really good question. And I don't want to overhype it too much. Like, I'm not saying this team goes as Braden Holcomb goes, but I just think – when you look at his power output and potential power output, it changes games. And, you know, if you put him, say you hit him sixth or seventh, you know, there's some opportunities, especially early in games where you got guys on, a couple guys on, and, you know, even just getting a double in the gap. I mean, I think he's finding a groove right now, and I just think it unlocks kind of another level. Like when Holcomb wasn't hitting well, you know, I felt like there was almost something missing with this team because we talked about him a lot before the season, Luke. And I just think their ceiling takes another step. When he is on like this, I mean, you saw it. It was a perfect example over the weekend. You know, they had no trouble in game three on Saturday with LSU, and a lot of that was because Braden Holcomb. He almost had three home runs. I mean, that the third one could have gotten out. And even against MTSU, he kept it rolling. He didn't hit any home runs, but he had some hard contact. I just think getting him going, even to a point where he's getting on base, is big for this team because it's another guy. And this team's going to need all the offense they can get. They're going to have to mix and match. But Luke, I know we talked about it. I think it really changes the outlook because he's that modern type guy. That a lot of teams have, like A&M has three or four of those. Tennessee has a couple of Braden Holcombs, I think you could say. Vanderbilt has one of them. I mean, he's an SEC hitter. And I'm not saying RJ Austin, Espinal, Polk, and Vaston, guys like that aren't. But physically, you know, he can go out of the yard whenever he wants. And I just think that really changes this team's ceiling and the outlook. But I think that's a good question.
No, it is. Now, Braden, the thing excited me, you know, he hits the mammoth home run for 466 feet over the scoreboard in left center. But what excited me more was the next home run, which was the line drive that didn't get 10 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
The type of hitter he is. So he's big and strong. If he doesn't have to square it up to get it out, but when he does square it up, it's going to be hit hard somewhere. So, you know, not only is he a slugger and part of that gorilla ball mentality that the rest of the league has, he's just a good athlete, man. For a big old kid, he is a good athlete. And there's somebody else I want you to think about, and I don't know that it'll happen this year, but looking to the future a little bit here, think about him and when Matt Austin Fort gets it and starts figuring out breaking balls and learns how to hit the ball better. That's two really powerful kids that everybody else has.
Yeah, you start looking forward. I don't want to gloss over this season.
Right.
You're starting to see the makeup of some pretty dominant teams here in the next few years with this core. They've got a really good core. And you can tell the recruiting has shifted a little bit. I mean, you go from getting guys like, again, nothing against Vastein, you know, Diaz and RJ Austin, but those guys are not power-type guys. You talk about Poteet, Holcomb, Austin Fort, you know, even Maldonado, those are legit power guys. And I think you can tell that strategy has shifted a little bit. And you're even seeing it this year when they get chances. So that's a good question there about Holcomb. All right. I think that's all the baseball. Let's go basketball. Now we got a couple basketball questions. First from VU Matt 23. Seems like Mark Byington is mostly targeting younger transfers. How do you feel about this strategy? Well, I think it's tough to say that. I would agree. And I don't want to say he's proving Jerry Stackhouse right that Vanderbilt doesn't get junior and senior transfers, but Stackhouse was partially right that it is harder. It's not impossible. Stackhouse should not have said that you can't. It's just, it is a little bit harder, class translation wise, whatever your credit translation wise. But I don't think that's a big deal. I think it's a good strategy. Keep an eye on Tyler Nickel from Virginia Tech. I think he could be, committing sometime this week. And I think, you know, that wouldn't surprise many people. They already got Jalen Carey, who's a young guy from JMU. But Luke, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, yeah, you got to get old, but you're not going to get old immediately. You know, it takes time to build. Look at UConn. Hurley, you know, he had to build that, you know, in a few years. And the programs that get old, it doesn't take 1 year. So I think another guy is transfer from North Carolina, Seth Trimble, to watch. And it's just hard. We don't know any of the staff. Joey and I were joking about this. You know, Joey had all kinds of connections with the last staff, but now, you know, you just don't know because it's a new staff and it hasn't even been officially announced, which I think is interesting. But what do you think, Luke? Younger transfers. It doesn't really shock me that is who they're going after. But then again, we don't really know who they're going after.
No, I think it's just too early to tell yet. I think we're going to have a barrage of it happen here in the next couple of weeks. Right now, look, if you're Mark Byington, let's be honest. If we're all, you know, here, we're all want Vanderbilt to win instantly, but that's not what we're looking at. We still, I don't think he still has a hold on who's coming back and who's not. He may have in his mind who he wants to retain, but we know a few that have already gone, like Lee Dort going to Cal Berkeley and so forth. But we still don't know who is being retained from the roster. So once we know that, then we'll have to – it's obvious his teams need shooters more than anything. Everyone's kind of worried about, well, we still don't have a big – his style of play, I'm not sure you want a seven-footer running up and down the floor unless it's a Zach Edey who can – 7'4" or whatever. But, I'm worried about that. I just want a couple of guys that can come in here and fill it up from three. And then would make our team and his style of play more competitive to where we can win some SEC games and get this thing back on track in year one.
Yeah, we got another basketball question, actually. Where is it here? Okay, Billy Ray Valentine. Do you notice – actually, that's a football one. Here's the basketball one. What is your sense of Mark Byington's overall game plan for 2024-25? You know, he talked about it a little bit, but he didn't – reveal a ton. And I think part of him is, I mean, naturally going to wait for the roster he's got, the official roster he's got, and look at it and go, okay, what's the best game plan and strategy, style of play, you know, for this group. I don't think he's got that hammered down quite yet. And that's, I mean, I think that's the way most coaches look at it, especially in today's day and age. You can't, you know, you don't know who you're going to have until probably a month. I mean, I think in about a month, you could probably say, okay, here's what I've got. We can get workouts in. We can start implementing everything. But at the bare bones of it, up tempo. You know, we talked about that positionless basketball. You know, and you brought that up, Luke. I don't think you want a 7-footer that is unathletic. Now, if you can get a 7-footer that can really run, that's a unicorn out there. I mean, good luck with that. But I mean, you know, Jalen Carey is a good example. He's 6'9". Maybe he plays the five, maybe he plays the four, but that's the thing. We're not going to be sitting here saying, here's the one. Well, I get you will have a point guard, take the one out, I guess. But, you know, two and three will be interchangeable. Four and five will be interchangeable. Three and four, maybe two and four. Like, there's going to be guys that play multiple positions. And I just think that's the style, positionless. You know, if you get the rebound, you're pushing it up the floor. Now, not every time, but, you know, in the film I've seen, that is what he has utilized. And I think that's what separates his style. But again, Luke, I don't think you can really talk much about it until you figure out who's here. I think Lee Dort's departure changes things a little bit. I'm not saying that was a shock, but I don't know how I wonder how he would have fit. Because you look at a guy like Jalen Carey, basically same size, same type position. Look at Jalen Carey. That's the type of mold I think Mark Byington will be bringing in. And Terrence Edwards from JMU, I know he ended up going to Louisville, but that type of player is a good example where you look at him, you go, he could play positions 2 through 4, really. Right. You know, he could post you up in the paint. And I think you're just going to see a lot of positionless guys. You know, a Jeff Roberson type, you know, is a guy that I think would fit really well. A lot of that team, Wade Baldwin, Luke Kornet could run up the floor. That would be Byington would have loved that team. But no, I just think we can't talk a ton about it yet. But at the bare bones, Luke, up tempo, and they're going to get it up and down the floor. And defense, don't forget about defense. You know, he's talked about that, creating offense through your defense. This is not going to be a soft defense. I mean, you watch a lot of the JMU games, they'll trap you, they get deflections. You know, they'll get on the ball and they'll get it out. You know, they'll get out and run. So, you know, I think that at least initially is what you're looking at, but I don't think you can really give a solid answer until you know who's on the roster yet.
No, ideally to me, a guy that on this roster who you can see that he would want would be a JQ Roberts who can shoot the basketball.
Yes.
What he wants. A 6'8 kid that can run, can defend. He's really athletic. And I think as time moves on, you're going to see more and more of that. One of the things I took from watching his teams play also, and I mentioned this when this all happened, is the way they defend the three. They don't get in scramble mode a lot. They were intentional about defending the three. Yeah, you may make them, but you're going to have a hand in your face. And you're not going to have somebody just flying at you. You're going to have somebody in position to defend you, so you're going to have to shoot over a hand. And I think that's something that this team sorely lacked.
Yeah. Okay, let's get over to football now. I got a lot of football questions. You can tell the fans are getting excited because they got some spring practice reports in. Let's see. OG706, can Vanderbilt football win four games this season, Luke?
Sure. They win four, they win five. I put that sliding scale at 3 to 5. I think the main thing I'm looking for, except obviously you want to win a conference game at very least, is to how competitive they are against some of these monsters they're going to play, against the Texas, Georgia, the Alabama, you know, those type of teams. Can you stay within a couple of touchdowns and go into the fourth quarter, have a you know, a long shot at beating them or something? That's the progress you're going to have to make in this year one. And I know people don't want to hear this, but this is kind of going back to year two for us, because Clark has retooled it all because he saw what it wasn't working. And he knew it wasn't going to work. So he did what a lot of coaches won't do. He fired a bunch of his friends and a bunch of people who it hurt him to do it. But he knew if he wanted to get this done long term, he had to do what he did. And he made himself defensive coordinator. He's betting on himself on that side of the ball. And then totally revamped offense, which I'm so excited about that, because shortening the game is the route to go at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean – you know, last season there were times when I thought to myself, even before the season started, Luke, is this going to work offensively? You know, because it's rare. You know, when Cutler was there, you know, he's an NFL quarterback. Is AJ Swann an NFL quarterback?
No.
Probably not. You know, and so you were doing it with Swann. Is that a misevaluation? Maybe. But, you know, staffs make mistakes. But I think the more important part about it is that, like you said, they realized they made mistakes, and Clark owned up to all of them, you know, and he made the changes. You know, we're going to be looking back at this. I think if this tenure gets going and is successful, we're going to be looking back at this offseason saying that was the pivot point. That is what changed this trajectory. Jerry Stackhouse, this is what he was never able to do.
Right.
You know, they never really made changes. The changes that were made were because an assistant was fed up and left like that. You know, so I think realizing the changes that had to be made, you look at this season and you go, okay, can they win four? Yeah, this season, it's probably going to be one of the harder seasons to win four. Number one, because of all the changes, you know, and it's the first. I like how you compared it to another year two, and you got to think realistically. I know people are excited, and fans should be excited, I think, about the changes, but there's still a lot to find out. There's still players to come in, and maybe you get a few of those offensive linemen. Maybe you get a couple more receivers. Maybe you get a game changer defensively. And maybe our tune changes right now. Luke, again, it's early. It's the spring. That's, you know, and you know, I can't tell much. We're watching from the balcony right now. You know, and the scrimmage was a good tell point. But I'm with you. Can they win four? Yeah. Will they? I don't know. I mean, I don't know that this season is as important in the win column. I'm not saying it's not. You can't go 2-10. I'm not saying that, but you know, 4-8. Not all 4-8s are created equal. If they go 4-8, and you know, barely squeak by one of those SEC teams, they get a win, and then kind of barely squeak by Georgia State, and just get blown out by every other SEC team. That's not a same 4-8 as, man, you were close to getting five. You know, you should have had another SEC win. I think that is what we're looking at. But again, it's early. Yeah. Can they? Yes. Will they? Who knows? Here's another similar question. Knoxville Door 94. Are you guys taking over the 2.5 wins for football? I will take the over 2.5 wins. I think you would too, Luke.
Yeah. Yeah, I think 3 minimum. And like I said, I think the ceiling for this team, if you get 5, you should be over the moon with that.
Absolutely. Let's see here. From Who You With VU, now that the coaching search dust has settled and things have smoothed out, where does the temperature of Candace Story Lee's seat currently sit? I think Chris would be the best to answer that, but I think you're also a guy that can probably answer that too, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the only thing that's stuck in her craw right now is extending Jerry Stackhouse. And that's over with. Whatever the amount, you know, I heard so many different amounts, $10 million, $15 million, whatever it wound up costing the university, that was unacceptable, and it should have never happened. He was, should have never been extended. We all know that. And she knows that if she, when she looks in the mirror. So that was the big mistake on her part. But that's over with. And obviously, Daniel Dearmeyer now moving forward is still confident in her. So if he is, and however he's doing that, in other words, Candace is still making decisions, but someone looking over her shoulder now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've just been kind of following along, listening to everything you and Chris say on that. Can somebody, here's the second part of his question, can somebody throw some NIL money to the marching band? After the longtime director was fired a few years ago, that poor band needs help. Bring back the Belmont, Lipscomb, Fisk, Trevecca High School former members, whatever. It's a weird thing to complain about, but the band sucks. That's not something I have thought about, but I guess, well, it, you know, I did think about it, and, you know, we were sitting next to each other during the introductory press conference, and as the band started to play, I just remember looking over and kind of laughing. You know, it's really not the best band, but I don't, you know, Vanderbilt, it's, you know, it's not a state school. You're not going to have a huge band, but I think some people are saying, you know, and I think I did see this on the board, either don't put them out there at all, or, you know, get maybe more members of the band to maybe make it sound louder. But that's kind of funny.
Well, let me say that here's, I've always said this because it's not really Vanderbilt's band. Like you said, it's the other colleges in town. A lot of them. Now, some of them are Vanderbilt students, obviously. And look, those kids do their best. I don't want to crack on them. But to me, Stanford has the answer. Stanford's band is crazy. They do silly things, antics. Yeah. I think that's the route you should take if you're Vanderbilt. Okay, look, we're not that great, but we're going to have fun with it. And, you know, put on show and have some routines and stuff. And, you know, I think that's the route they should take, unless they're going to really put a lot of money into it, which I don't see that happening.
Yeah, that was going to be my thing to say, you know, make a scholarship or several scholarships and make it an appeal to be in Vanderbilt's band. But right now, you know, it's just not. And a lot of, you know, their members are not students there. So that's, you know, well, and Vanderbilt, as you know, Luke, historically, it's not something they take a ton of pride in, which, I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's just kind of the fact of the matter.
Well, you know what's interesting, though? They have one of the best music schools in America. Blair School of Music is highly regarded. So I don't know if that doesn't work together, but there's got to be a reason for it.
Yeah, I mean, you're in Nashville, too. Belmont's done a good job of that with, you know, I'm not saying Belmont has a band, but, you know, Vanderbilt, surely the Blair School of Music could translate there. That's one of the more funny mailbag questions we've gotten. Okay, VU Perrier, how involved is Jerry Kill in schemes, practice, offseason, and games? I think he's involved. I think, you know, and I've heard this, and I've thought about this, too. And I would never, I'm not saying this is true and this is what's going on, but it almost feels like Jerry Kill is a pseudo head coach right now. Now I get, you know, Clark has said he's the head coach of the offense with Tim Beck, you know, and Jerry Kill and Tim Beck are almost kind of interchangeable pieces there. I think Kill is almost just as important as Beck, you know, offensively and what they want to do. But what I've noticed, Luke, and it's been fun to watch, he's such a, you know, he's an older guy, but he almost reminds you of kind of one of those older high school coaches that just, you know, Vanderbilt hasn't had that old school, old fashioned, just toughness in their program. They haven't, they've had a really young staff and, you know, I'm not saying they haven't been tough because these have been some tough teams from Clark Lee, you know, just physically in terms of, you know, grit and coming back in games and strong in fourth quarters, but except for last year, of course, but I've noticed from Jerry Kill that anytime the offensive line pushes the pile and you know, finishes strong, he's fired up. I mean, he's into it. And, you know, he's not like that all the time. But I think when he does, it makes a statement, and that shows that, okay, that offensive line group put in that effort that play. Or this fullback made a heck of a block. Gabe Fisher had a loud block yesterday in practice, and everybody erupted. Kill was fired up, Klonakis and everybody. That's what I've noticed. I think Kill, Klonakis, and Beck are on the offensive side, and it's Clark Lee. It's a battle every day in practice against Clark Lee and Lazinski and Hay and Black, and it's pretty fun to watch because those are good coaches. I mean, those are that's a really good DC in Clark Lee, that's a pretty good OC in Tim Beck and a coach like Jerry Kill that's coached for a long time. So those are fun battles to watch. But scheme wise, he's important. I mean, you know, Tim Beck's the OC, but you know, this is that was Jerry Kill's team last year at New Mexico State, and he's as important. He was at Minnesota too, and I think he did a lot of the same stuff. So Jerry Kill, Luke, he keeps coming up, and you know, I think he'll be heavily involved.
Let me say something, that, and I'm not trying to say I'm Mr. Know-It-All, but I was at 40 years of practices, and especially 40 years of spring practices. What happens in spring, especially now that you're implementing and installing a whole new offense, you got to have offense win the day a lot to learn some or win a day sometimes. And this stuff is kind of pre-planned, kind of like live studio wrestling. It's in other words, do some things today that's going to make the defense look good. All right, 2 days later, we're going to do some things to make the offense look good. You've got to build confidence in these kids in the spring, and especially installing all this new stuff. Don't take a whole lot out of spring practice, spring scrimmages, spring games, because first of all, in the new era, you're going to have probably four or five guys that aren't out there because guys don't play in the spring like they used to. You used to have all this full contact in the spring. There's very little full contact now. Quarterbacks don't get hit at all anymore. So don't take a whole lot out of spring. What you want to take a whole lot out of is that first couple of weeks of fall camp, which I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Second part of this question here, as the DC, can Clark get us up to performing as a middle of the pack SEC defense or better? It's a good question. Middle of the pack, that's just hard. I mean, you know, one of the surprises, Luke, in this era, and it's nothing against Clark. I think it's just kind of the state of affairs in the SEC right now where it's offense heavy. The defenses haven't been as good as I might have expected. I think year one was the best defense they had, which is kind of surprising. But you did have Jesse Minter, who was a really good DC, and he's, I think, back in the NFL now, I want to say. And, you know, and then year two, of course, Minter leaves. You know, you've got Howell and then Howell again in year three. And so I think the defense is going to be better. Am I ready to say middle of the pack or better? No, because they haven't been that. I think they can potentially. I think at the end of the season, we could look at this and say, you know, this defense is keeping them in games. You know, this defense is able to hold up there in the bargain, but offensively is the concern. Now, I still have hesitation in saying that because a lot of the offenses you're going to be facing, you're facing Quinn Ewers in Texas, you're facing Milroe in Alabama, you're facing Nico in Tennessee, Missouri, who's got basically everybody back. I mean, these are some high-flying offenses in the SEC, and it's just hard to it's hard to defend. Those teams are hard to defend. So that's what I would say defensively, Luke. I'm not quite ready to say they'll be middle of the pack under Clark, but I think they'll be a lot better, and I think they could, but again, by the end of the season, get up to close to that point at least.
Well, I think the key to it is be better plus have 15 to 20 less plays on the field. And I think with this offense, that's going to help the defense so much. And I think that you could look at a team with points allowed that would maybe increase by anywhere from 7 to 10 points. So that way you have a chance in the fourth quarter. That's what it puts you, because you got to score points to win in the SEC now. You're not going to win 10 to 7 anymore. Those guys are over with. So if you can get your offense scoring 28 and your defense giving up around 28, then you got a shot every time.
Let's see here. Last one here, Luke. Pessimistic Door. Do we have an idea how much Nate Johnson got in NIL as opposed to the other quarterbacks? That's a good question. I know Nate Johnson is in the six figures, which is pretty normal for, you know, an SEC level quarterback and a pretty high level transfer like him. You know, he was pursued by other schools. Pavia is interesting. I don't think he's making as much as Nate Johnson. I could be totally wrong there. And then the other quarterbacks, freshman wise, you know, not as much, of course. And then Berlowitz, probably not as much. Nate Johnson, I would say my gut tells me he's making the most. I could be totally wrong there. Maybe Pavi is making more than him, Luke. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. I haven't brought that up with Clark or anyone else. I do know there's a lot more money available for transfers and for NIL. So I do know that, and I feel really good about that. I think, you know, we talk about middle of the pack. I think we are middle of the pack in that, which is huge. It had to happen.
Absolutely. I think Nate Johnson he's making his fair share. We'll see, but that's the thing about Diego Pavia. I don't know if money was a huge pull for him. I think just being able to play some more football and you know, reunite with the entire New Mexico State offense, which I thought was interesting. But yeah, so that's what we got, Luke. Of course, we do have practice. I'll be there tomorrow. I want to say another scrimmage on Saturday.
That's correct.
I want to say, and I think it's at Ensworth. Could be wrong. Yeah, I think it is at Ensworth. So I will not be able to be there. I think Joey might be able to make that one. And then, of course, we got a big baseball series this weekend. Byington looking at some transfers. So a lot going on. Luke, any parting thoughts?
No, I going back to baseball a little bit, if we can just get one this weekend. I know when you go to places like LSU and A&M and back-to-back weekends, you hope to come out of it 2-4. Well, we've already won two. So now if we can come out of it 3-3 at worst, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. And if you happen to win the series, wow, that's a cherry on top.
Absolutely. You can't get swept. That's the biggest thing. And it's hard to not get swept on the road sometimes in the SEC. I mean, you know, that's just the state of affairs. It'll be a great atmosphere, though, this weekend. Enjoy watching that. It'll be great baseball. You got some other pretty good series going on in the SEC, so we'll be keeping up with those. But that'll do it. That's Luke Wyatt. I'm Billy Derrick. If you're interested in sponsoring this show, email Chris Lee at chrislee70@gmail.com. Give us a 5-star rating and review. That helps us get noticed. Subscribe to our VandySports.com YouTube channel as well. That is free. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again soon with more episodes of the Vandy Sports Podcast.